Hi, this is Steve again with another lost tape. This lost tape is from November 2023. It was the same day Jeff and I found out one of our best friends from growing up had passed away. And this is about Brandon. He was with us all along our video game and gaming journey through high school and into adult life. And he passed away of brain cancer. It took me a while to gain the ability to actually sit down and edit this one, but I think the discussion is interesting because it's all about being a teenager in the 80s and what it meant to play video games and listen to music. And I think it's at least interesting from that standpoint.
What's going on, Steve? It's probably the worst day in a long time. What do you think? Worst day since, I don't know, a day since like April of 2021. Yeah, I don't know. I think I would, in some ways, it's
It's
worse.
worse, I know.
Here comes the episode of this. This episode is probably called Brandon and the Meddlers. So let's just talk about that. And this is about our friend Brandon, who passed away yesterday of cancer. Except Brandon wasn't just any old
No,
friend.
he was not.
And that's what we wanted to get in today because Brandon was along on our journey, our gaming and just life journey most of the time.
Most of the time.
And
After the age of 13,
he's a
really.
very special friend to us.
From 13 on,
Yeah,
really.
very special friend to us. Yeah, 13 or 12 or 13 on. Our friend Brandon passed away of brain cancer yesterday. He's f only 53 years old, and it's just fucking
The
tragic.
big irony is that he was one of the smartest people in the entire world, one of the most
He was super
creative, and his
smart.
brain got mad at him for being that.
I don't know. We who knows what happened, but he left his wife and daughter, which is just really fucking sad,
Really sad.
and who just started college, and guy was in pain for a long time, but I'm not going to say anything about this being a good thing or anything because it
It's
fucking
not a good
wasn't.
thing.
It
There's
fucking
nothing
sucks.
good about
No.
it.
Nothing good about it. There's zero thing good about it. But what we do want to do is salute Brandon, who is not going to have a moral anything as he's not a religious person. And I think that I understand why they're not going to do that. But we need to have some closure ourselves, and so that's what we're going to do here in a gaming context, video game, and sort of Gen X context. We're going to talk about our friend.
We're going to talk about our friend. He was with us for most of our journey with games, and so that's what this context is about. Of course, life is not just games, but there's just a lot of entertainment and things we worked on, we enjoyed with him, and we're going to talk a little bit about the game aspect because that's what this podcast and video channel are about. So.
Right. Okay, so let's just start out about who Brandon was. Brandon was a guy that we met in junior high school, about 1982, I'd say. I think we met him in sixth grade, but we weren't really friends until seventh grade.
Yeah, probably.
And Brandon was a classic heavy meddler. In a very awesome way. So
Yes.
I remember the first time we met him, he had long hair. It wasn't super long at that time, but it was longer, long blonde hair. And he was growing out his fingernails as well to be long too. And I think at that time he wore a studded bracelet. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Like a stud, not really a bracelet, like a studded, what would you call it? What you'd see Rob Halford wear on the cover of like a Judas Priest record or something, right? There was no one else at school that did
Not really.
that. There were a couple other heavy metalers, but no one looked like Brandon. Brandon had
No.
decided, we talk about like punk rockers and stuff like that and people standing out, but literally Brandon was like the first guy who just decided he was going to be who he wanted to be.
Yeah.
And, in our new wave school, he sort of stood out.
He did stand
out. But he was so smart and so friendly, like so smart and such a he had such a good personality and friendly that I don't think it really hurt him socially that much. I mean, like not terribly is what I mean.
Right.
I don't think they necessarily considered him. He was a smart guy, but he did get lumped in with there was another guy named Scott who was a heavy meddler, and then us and our friends. But because we hung out with those guys, we were all called the meddlers.
The meddlers, and only like a couple people listened to heavy metal. Like they just didn't listen to.
But it didn't matter.
Yeah, it didn't matter. Everyone was the meddlers, which was kind of funny.
As long as you didn't listen to Duran Duran, you were a meddler. It was very there's a subtlety did not exist in this scenario. But you know, he was a friend, you know, in this junior high prison we went to. And I think most junior highs feel like prison, but ours in particular was kind of looked and shaped like a prison.
Ours looked so, just like a prison. It had these Well, let me explain how it looks like a prison just a little bit. They had these giant gray the school was built in these big steps. And big steps meaning 25-foot steps. So every bank of classrooms was on another step. And the walls between the classrooms were these gray with rust from the fence coming down onto the gray, and the only thing you could do on the blacktop between the rooms was play handball. It was exactly like a prison.
It was a high stakes game of handball. We covered this a little bit in a couple of our other stories in the past. One about Laser Blast, and the one I did one last year about the computer lab. And we talked a little bit about, we even talked about it then, but we didn't talk really specifically about our friends that were there and how it worked. And I guess I think it's pretty standard. Like I think our junior high story is pretty standard. It's just that in this case, it was super well focused in that we went to this junior high in a Southern California beach city, and almost everyone was a surfer, kind of, or at least you could think of them in that way. A surfer who listened to Duran Duran and, was a ace volleyball player. Like that's basically 60% of the people. Not really, but it kind of felt like it. It's probably only 10% of the people, but it really felt that way. Right. You know, it was right out of, It was right out of Revenge of the Nerds, the fraternity, basically all the guys.
The 10% of people that you were forced to notice seemed like 100% of the people.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, I remember Brandon coming over in sixth grade when we first got the first issue, or one of the first issues, not the first one, of Electronic Games Magazine. And we were reading it at school, and he came over to see it. And I think that's the first time we became kind of friends. Like he was interested in the magazine. I don't think he or anyone else really, honestly, had ever seen a video game magazine before.
Right.
You and I, who spent too much of our time with our mom at the grocery store, knew every magazine on the rack. So we were really into Electronic Games Magazine, and I think that it was kind of like the playground people sort of allude to, like kids talk about stuff on the playground, but like it really wasn't a playground. It was the hallways during lunch, and it wasn't in elementary schools or junior high, but we did pass around Electronic Games, and it was the beginning of video game culture. As far as I'm concerned, this was the real, this is the beginning, right? Nintendo guys can think it began with them, but it didn't. It began here, you know, with those magazines, with us, you know, talking about the games and where it really started. Well, we'll get to that in a sec. So what do you remember about that time?
Well, I remember, very much Brandon's excitement over upcoming video games. Like didn't really care much about the 2600. Nothing. I think he really liked the game Donkey Kong, and he really liked the game Mr. Dude.
Yeah.
And because he loved those two games.
He loved
those two games, and they were coming out on the ColecoVision, which it wasn't announced yet, I'm sure, but I mean, it
It was announced by the time we got that magazine. I think people were talking about the ColecoVision.
Okay, yeah,
it was sometime in 1982. So we had the first version of Electronic Games in November 1981. But by the time the next issue came out, which is sometime in February or March, I think people had heard about the ColecoVision. Like, the idea was like, hey, this brand new video game system is coming out, and it's supposed to be arcade quality.
It did look arcade quality to us compared to what we rolled. We didn't have a computer yet. We didn't have the Atari 8-bit, which, you know, has very, very comparable graphics, or even better, more colors if you do it right. So the ColecoVision to us was like, does look arcade. Like, it looked as closely arcade as you were going to get at the time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we can talk about that in a bit. I want to say just a sec before we get to the ColecoVision. So the first time, I think the second moment became a friend with Brandon was the Motley Crue story. Right. You know that story, right? So Brandon and I were in sixth grade. It could have been seventh grade. It probably was seventh grade, but it's either sixth or seventh grade. And we're sitting in history class, and I follow Brandon out to his locker, and there's a girl there, one of the very popular, sir, you know, one of the stereotypical girls, right? Grand Duran, blonde, you know, the whole thing. But she's very upset, and you know, Brandon was a heavy meddler, and so she says, "Come to my locker. I want to ask you a question." And she's visibly shaking, like she's really upset. And this is why I've never forgot this. And so we go there, and she opens her locker, and she pulls out a map from Disneyland. And she goes to the description of Pirates of the Caribbean, and she's reading it. She says, "What does this mean?" Right here it says, "You will travel with the motley crew of pirates." and she's like, "What?" Like, she's thinking they're satanic.
Thinking, yeah, right?
She's thinking it has to do with the devil. Like somehow her soul has been infected by writing Pirates of the Caribbean. And Brandon has to explain to her that motley crew refers to a sort of assorted group of people, right? All it means is that it's a, which is funny because when people, like, you know, the fact that people put spikes and umlauts on their name suddenly made them, you know, heavy satanic metal at the time. Not that Motley Crue didn't like perpetuate themselves that way. Don't get me wrong. They
all knew how to market themselves.
They played it up.
They marketed themselves for the crowd that liked, you know, the English heavy metal bands at the beginning, and then they marketed themselves for just the bros who wanted to party later in the 80s, right? So anyway, that's how
Motley Crue. Yeah, they really did
with whatever trend they could do, and they followed it, and they made a lot of money doing it.
It was funny as. Yeah, they all did that. Jeff was, you know what, he was really funny, and this is just an aside. I was watching videos a week ago or so, and I was watching The Cult, you know, Rain by The Cult, yeah. And I'm like, wow, like, this is really kind of like, it's kind of goth, it's kind of dark, it's kind of like, you know, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, there's a little bit of androgyny to it, right? And then I see a video for Love Removal Machine, which came out like 2 years later or something. And I thought it was a joke. Like, I thought they were parodying themselves, because literally, like, all of a sudden, Billy Duffy's wearing like a fur, like denim vest, or like shirtless. And I'm like, is this a joke? And I realized, no, not at all. They were just going with the times. When they needed to be an androgynous goth band, that's what they were. When they needed to be a hair metal band, they were. It really didn't matter, you know. Anyway.
So did we play Dungeons & Dragons with Brandon before any video games, or what did we do?
So Brandon invited us over. So after the Motley Crue incident, Brandon invited us over to his house to play Dungeons & Dragons. And we had played Dungeons & Dragons earlier in fifth grade with Kenny Brown, and I'd bought it, and we've kind of read through some of the adventures. I think you even went – I even DM'd a one-person adventure with you at home. But it really wasn't fun without a lot of people, and I hated being Dungeon Master.
We dabbled in it.
Yeah. But then we didn't realize that Brandon is an incredible writer, and he made his own adventures for Dungeons & Dragons. Right. And so we went over, and I think first we played like like this the second Adventures, like the Curse of the Spider Queen or something. But which is fine, that was fun. But then he made his own, and I can't remember exactly what it was, but we were blown away because he was such a good writer.
Yeah.
And he crafted these stories, and he didn't want to kill us off. He wanted us to actually hear his all the creative stuff he'd done, so he would find ways to not make us die for doing stupid stuff.
And then over the years, our adventures became a way for him to get his real creative ideas into writing. So then he could, instead of someone reading his book, he was doing the adventure, and it was fantastic because all of his creative juices would go into making those games.
But I think so. And we gone to his house that first time when we play. I think we listened to like Motley Crue, and I thought my soul was going to burn at the time. Which is hilarious. Oh. And then soon after playing Dungeons and Dragons, he got the ColecoVision. And that's where it was like, it wasn't the ColecoVision came out summer 1982, but I don't think he got it until Christmas 82 or 83 or in sometime in 1982, 83. But as soon as Brandon got the ColecoVision, and I think people who weren't there probably don't understand the literal schism. The ColecoVision came out, the Atari VCS at 5200 had lost complete mind share. Like it was the VCS was a joke. And to us, we still had a VCS, that's what we had, and we still liked the games. But literally everybody wanted a ColecoVision at the time. Right. Like if you were in junior high, at least, if you were a junior high kid and you were a nerd and you were part of the meddlers group, of which there were like 10 of us, everybody wanted a ColecoVision. Because it was amazing. And we go to Brandon's house, and I think we sat and played Donkey Kong with him first. And he had a couple of games. I know he had Smurf Rescue. I know they got to the part where they knew about dropping Smurfette's dress and all that stuff. But I think the game that Brandon probably played the most and his brother Marshall did was Mr. Do, which is a weird game.
I like Mr. Do. But it's a weird game.
It's just
it's got clowns.
I think you're a clown, Mr. Do. It's right up their alley.
Clowns eating fruit. It was just weird. Collecting fruit.
It was kind of like Dig Dug, but
it was more interesting. Marshall than
Brandon's
Dig Dug.
Brother was
it was like a pinball machine version of Dig Dug, where you could collect the word extra and all these cool things. It was like pinball machine designers made it. They understood like a game play and sort of game mechanics a little better than Dig Dug, which was good, but it just got very repetitive, where Mr. Do has actually had a lot more fun to it.
Yeah, he it's funny that Mr. Do only had a Mr. Do had a 16-bit register was used for the score.
Right.
So it goes up to like 64,000 something, right? Yeah. But Brandon's brother was convinced that it went up to 66,600, right? He was convinced that it was that the game, you know, was
rolling
was,
over with was, the devil or something, right?
Was it rolling was, over at 666. But you couldn't tell because by the time it got up there, like the score went so fast. So they were just convinced that was happening, which was not true. I don't think it was true anyway, but it was funny. It kind of went along with that era of the Motley Crue and the stuff. It was super fun, and Brandon kept getting. So he got the roller controller with Slither.
Oh, yes,
I know he got the super controller
for baseball.
Playing the super baseball
game. It's funny
because
what did Brandon care about baseball? But it's like the only reason he liked baseball is because baseball is a game you could play with the controller.
Yeah, no, I think it was funny because I think he wasn't into sports, but I think he was into video games, and the video games. I think. Well, Brandon did try to play sports. We'll talk about that in a sec. But I think for him, that was an outlet. I mean, we used to play Over the Line all the time. We'd go together and play it. I think he wanted to be able to play sports. I think his body was a little awkward, but not that
not
much.
That
he
awkward,
probably
though.
Could have been good if he was trained right. He probably could have been really good. But what I'm trying to say is I think he was beaten down to the point where he wouldn't try to play sports.
Right.
Those games gave him an outlet to play, which if you think about it is one of the tenets of video games to begin with is that video games, I think, became popular with a certain set of kids because they could compete in a way they couldn't compete other ways.
Right.
And competition was the point of video games at the beginning, right? I mean, most video games are sports games in some way whatsoever, even if it's not about a sport, right?
Yeah,
it's
how high you can score. You score higher than the other team. That's a sport.
Yeah, know, and when really the Nintendo era is about finishing, and, right? It's about the adventure and the story and all that.
Yeah, it was about like
right.
exploring.
And I think that now we have games that when you the story mode is about story, you know, in your FPS, they'll have a story mode, but they'll also have the sports mode too, okay, which is the or the game where you're fighting people, right? So, you know, you're fighting each other. So I mean, I think both of those tenets have become modern video games, but for us it was mostly the competition. I think it was kind of cool that he just kept getting all the ColecoVision stuff. And really, ColecoVision, there was no good reason why Coleco failed. There was a bad reason why Coleco failed.
Is what happened. And,
well, what happened is Coleco put out the Atom and lost their shirt. They wanted to get into the computer thing, and they lost all their money on the Atom. But like, if they had just kept doing the ColecoVision, which, by the way, the ColecoVision was the Sega SG-1000. I think it was like a Sega Sega chipset or something very similar. Like the SG-1000 can run ColecoVision games.
Yeah, it's basically. It's really close to the MSX, to be honest with you, which is close to the SG-1000.
Okay.
There used to be an MSX. You use an MSX emulator to run ColecoVision games.
If we're doing this on video, a little something to pop up to correct us will come up right now anyway, right, to tell us how we're wrong. But
it will be on video.
But my point is there's no the ColecoVision could have outlasted Atari. Coleco could have been Sega, and probably would have been Sega in the USA if they had kept going, because Sega would have kept releasing their consoles that way.
Right.
But because the Atom kind of destroyed their business, just like with the Intellivision, the Aquarius kind the. I take that back. It might not have just been the Aquarius, but Aquarius added to it, right?
Yeah, the idea that you would both pivot to computers. Problems. They didn't help anything, right?
They didn't help anything, right? And I think that the Coleco was a good system. And the frame rate's a little low, but I think it really was impressive. And going over and playing at his house was fantastic. And that was our one outlet to be able to do that. But my point is, Brandon became a really good friend at that time.
Yeah, he did. And from his ColecoVision, we decided we were going to get one. Then we didn't. We went and got a Vectrex instead.
Yeah, we got a Vectrex instead, which probably was actually a really good choice to get the Vectrex instead, because I still have it. And the Vectrex was great, but it suffered the same fate in that it wasn't gonna last. You know, the crash just wasn't.
We hoped it. We didn't know what was going to last or wasn't going to last.
So let's return a little bit to the meddlers. So we're in this group called the meddlers in junior high, and there was a volleyball tournament in late. It was in spring 1984 or something, but for some reason we decided to go into the volleyball tournament. I believe Brandon was on our team.
He was. I think Scott Johnson.
It was you and I, Scott Johnson, Brandon, Greg Dyer, and one other person. You had to have a six-person team. And I know we were decent at volleyball because everybody in the school learned to play volleyball because we had to play. This is schools that are feeders into high schools that are like always national champions in volleyball. So everybody needed to at least know how to play. And I know I still have muscle memory being able to play volleyball.
Yeah.
A few years ago at work, we went to Beast to play volleyball, and it kicked everybody's ass just from the memory of the muscle memory from junior high.
Right.
And I sucked. Like, you know what I mean? So I love volleyball. It was fun. But I think, again, Brandon played, and I think that was because he really did want to compete. I think the problem was he also wanted to grow his nails long, and playing volleyball was really hard to do.
Well, I was going to say, then we did compete in this tournament, and I think we did get our butts kicked most of the games, but we did okay.
Well, we could be in the tournament. They called us the meddlers.
Yeah,
the team
we didn't
name,
call ourselves
we
the
named
meddlers,
ourselves
did we?
The meddlers. I don't think we did. I think we were team six and someone wrote down the meddlers, and it was just part of that, part of hazing us a little bit. And you and I were not meddlers at all. We were the brothers we were breakdancing of punk at the rockers, time, I think. But we got really into breakdancing. maybe Jeff Shibata was on the volleyball team.
Shibata was breakdancing with us. He was on the volleyball team with us too.
I got so upset about the whole thing though. Like, so what happens in the volleyball anyway? Sorry, return to it. We won a game, or we won two games. We were doing pretty good, and then we got put up against the best team, like all the best players, including a guy named Casey Miner, who's now like a really good friend. Like, Casey's been a great guy, right? He's like, over the years, he's become a nice friend on Facebook, and to meet him, he's really cool. But Casey was on that team, I believe, with like five of the other just best people possible, right? And you know, in the movie version, we win the volleyball match. In the actual real life version, every single person surrounding that volleyball court rooted against us.
Wanted to see us like get hit everybody in the face
wanted,
with the ball.
Wanted to see us not just lose, but get hurt losing.
I don't understand. Like, yeah, it was. It
wanted
was
to
kind
see
of
us destroyed. Even our, even people that were our friends, like
they
girls that were our
in
friends and stuff.
So that they...
I literally remember them joining in to like make sure like that we, because I think the whole idea of meddlers and the whole idea of this of something different was an affront, right? And as much as we could be friends with people, we were an affront to normalcy, and we've only seen this grow over the years, right? And what I remember was I wasn't ever mad at the guys who beat us because they beat us.
Yeah, they beat
us. I was mad at those people that I thought were our friends.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
So then
all
what
six of us
is,
put ourselves out there to try something, and then they were, and there was, you know, it was almost like it was like an episode of Freaks and Geeks, where like.
Yeah,
like the other nerd kids rooted against their friends because they didn't want to be picked out because they didn't have the balls to do something different or to compete.
Well, and that's what was so great about Freaks and Geeks is they elucidated that point. They made that point clear, was that when you're in a group of people like the meddlers, like. You're like, you know, in the movie version, they all stand up for each other, right? No. They're the Goonies. Yeah. In the real life, every single one of us would have stepped on the other to get the fuck out, right? Because it sucked.
Yeah.
It sucked. And a lot of people did. And I mean, not like a mean way, but
well,
like, you're like,
in junior
I'm not,
high.
I can't stand up for you
in junior high.
It's a junior high way. And I feel, yeah, it was really, in high school, things are different, but we got our ass kicked badly, and I turned at that point, that might have been the turning point when I turned off from everyone that we were growing up with,
yeah.
but it wasn't. I think there was a couple other events that happened afterwards,
yeah,
that made
me
go, you know what, fuck this shit. But that was one of them where I'm like, wait a minute, like I'm not the bad guy here. Like, we're just trying to play, and you literally want them to hurt us.
Yeah.
Like, and there are people to this day who I think wonder why I didn't want to be friends with them after that.
Yeah,
and like, that's it.
That's it.
That was the reason.
Yeah.
But then what happened is like, a few weeks later, we had to write some essay for English class. And I wrote one about how there's two types of music I hate, disco and heavy metal. And I had to read it out in front. Everyone's like, oh, you don't like disco and heavy metal. It was my attempt to kind of like get out of the meddler thing. And it kind of worked in a way. You know, the funny thing is we were being a heavy metal. Brandon sounds like, I actually liked both. It wasn't true at all.
I didn't mind either one.
But what I remember was some of the girls after class coming up saying, oh, yeah, and being receptive to it. And then I remember Brandon being in there too and just saying, I thought you kind of liked that stuff with me. And it was like, broke his fucking heart.
Yeah, I know.
And I was like, oh, my God, what a dick I am. I'm just like some of those other guys who would just step on us to get away. And you know who some of those people were.
So
and then I realized
did.
That's when that's when I realized I didn't would never do that again. Like, I'm like, that just fucking sucked. So after that, though, a month or so later, Brandon came over to our house when we had our Atari 100, and we showed him how we wrote a program to generate sentences. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the sentences were about people at school. And he was absolutely fascinated by the fact that the computer could just create language from nothing.
Right.
And I think we showed him that patched it up a bit.
Well, I showed him Gateway to AppShy. And he really wanted.
Yeah, we showed him games, and he got really. And then he got Gateway to AppShy for the ColecoVision.
Yeah.
So that was at least a little bit better. But I think after that, the instant it's junior high, like we kind of moved away from being friends for a while.
I think it's the summer between junior high and freshman year in high school. Everybody kind of moved out, and then we had to move back in again. Basically, within a couple years. Went from acquaintances to friends again. That happens with a lot.
Yeah, at least by the time senior year rolled around, we became fast friends again.
Well, we actually in our junior and in junior year too.
Junior year too, right? We started buying Doc Martens, started listening to different music. We go over to Brandon's house, and now instead of just he's listening to a lot of Queen, he'd kind of given up on the silly heavy metal stuff. Yeah. Not all because of it, hair but most
metal,
of it.
We were even making fun of hair metal with him. Like, it's like yeah. You go into BAM, and the only bands that were interesting to look at were the ones that were in the back that looked like Motorhead, and there was like one of them.
Right. It's like MX Missile or something.
Yeah. Well, they had a name that I can't say on the thing.
But so Brandon got really into Stiff Little Fingers with us. And the Clash and the Sex Pistols and stuff like that. And he got really into those things. And so I think by our junior year, we were kind of moving in that direction.
Yeah.
And we became friends again. And one of the things we did, we didn't really play. Oh, we got back together. We played Dungeons and Dragons again. But he was not the Dungeon Master. It was someone else. So we got back together and we played Dungeons and Dragons. And then... in senior year, we were in honors English class together, and we made a movie. We made a movie.
Well, okay, actually, the end of junior year, you and I and James Koo and Justin Hollingsworth and Brandon and quite possibly Ian Legler, we all had to go to Marat Saw done by the inmates of some asylum thing down in East LA.
Oh, yeah.
We went with
yeah.
Justin, and then... We took his dad's van, and it was like a wild adventure you only see in like a movie. Like
we had a wild all night adventure in Justin's van driving around Los Angeles Catcher in the Rye or something.
The door got stuck in the thing van. Someone tried to chase us. Whatever happened, then we all became fast friends at that. Like, that became, like, this turning point when instead of just being, like, kind of each being their own loner set to different, we all kind of grouped together as one sort of set of friends.
That's right. I forgot about – I didn't forget about the outing, but I forgot that was kind of the impetus.
All because of Dr. Worry and her making us go to the East LA to see that thing on a Friday night.
That's right. Maybe she knew.
She knew.
She was a teacher of the year.
Yeah, she was teacher of the year. She told everybody all the time that she's teacher of the year.
So then in senior year, we made a couple, like, I think you and I had no idea what we were going to do with our lives. And we decided we want to make some movies. And we made a movie for the end of our honors English class. And Brandon was the star.
Yeah, Brandon was the star. But Brandon was really intrigued by the titles and the stuff you made on the Atari ST with this movie.
Right. So I did all the titles of the Atari ST. Basically, I think they were just drawn in CyberPaint.
Yeah, probably.
And then we didn't have any editing software. It's not like this is a 520 ST. It's not like Genlock or anything. Literally, it was like recording. I made a slideshow of the title screens of which the ending and the credits. And I recorded it and then recorded it to video. And then we had a video that we went out and in sequence we recorded a movie of Brandon. What?
Yeah. In sequence,
right? Yeah. In sequence we recorded a movie of Brandon being J. Alfred Punk Rock and going through all the literature we read during the year on some weird adventure, which now I did watch, and it's terrible, it's but terrible. It also...
No, you know what's terrible about that? Me.
Me too.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to say it, but we both suck in that. I mean, it's like stop getting... Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, we're awful.
We were awful.
We're awful in that movie. Okay, we're awful. We're awful. Okay?
Definitely but, destined not to be on camera.
No, definitely destined never to be on camera, right? Brandon was good on camera.
Brad was really good, yeah.
Yeah, so, but the way we made it was we filmed it all in sequence, and then there's quality wrinkles in there. We couldn't edit really because we had nothing to edit with. But what we could do, well, I guess we could have edited, but we didn't. We got the stereo. I made the slideshows of the credits, the beginning and ending credits, and then we recorded audio into the VCR. We recorded the audio on top of the Atari ST for the credits, and then we recorded the video, and then we again swapped it out and recorded the Atari ST again to a videotape. So at the end, you had basically three parts, and then when certain sequences would come up in the video, we would play music, and then we like basically unplugged the audio right. The audio cord and plugged in the other.
It's
audio
almost
cord.
Like editing was in sequence too. Like in yes. Like we actually did that for another movie too. We did.
We made other movies, but sequence. I mean, I think that they're all like done in sequence. They weren't really edited.
I mean, in real time, stuff.
Too. If we had an Amiga, we would have been able to edit, and that's a big .
Well, you would need disk space too, though, and I don't think it would have worked the same way. We didn't have enough disk space to do it.
You mean we would have needed a hard drive, which there's no way we would have had. Right. So then I mean, I think that was funny is that our teacher loved the movie. And she was the only one who she let make a movie. We were the only ones. And then after that, we became really good friends.
Right.
And Brandon went to the same college we did. And Brandon started working at the library with me as well. And so we were spending maybe too much time together. But then we sold Brandon our 520 ST, and he became an ST user as right. well. And he was fascinated by the games. I'm not sure what the first game that he played on the 520 ST was, but he wanted a computer for writing. He had had a word processor for a long time, like a Impact word processor, and he loved it. And it's even in the movie.
It is.
But with the ST, it was more like a Macintosh, but we sold it to him really cheap, and then he had like a in the monochrome mode, he could literally, it was literally like a way better word processor than what he was using, and he could print it out. I think did he have a printer?
So, I can't remember. Yeah, eventually he had a printer. I think we didn't actually give him a monochrome monitor, so he actually bought a color monitor to go with it. And so he bought our 520 ST for just a couple $100. We used that money.
Because it was the STFM, so he had to use it on the TV.
He could use it on the TV, but he also had a color monitor because he did.
Right.
But I remember we'd go over there and we would play Arkanoid and it looked and sounded fantastic, right? Arkanoid 2. We copied a couple discs for him at the beginning before we got any other software. So he got Arkanoid and a couple of the games that we had as pirate games, but. Then we also
he also drove, so he went on our treks to Computer Games Plus because he went to Long Beach State with us. Then we would go down there. And I know he bought at least Foundations Waste, which is a really cool shoot. Well, I don't know how cool it is, but it was a fun shooter at the time.
It's a good explosion generator.
Really into Foundations Waste, really into Gods, which is not a Bitmap Brothers game, but I thought it was.
No, Gods is a Bitmap Brothers game.
Okay.
Yeah, they designed it. They didn't program it.
Maybe Switchblade. There's one of those where I thought was Bitmap Brothers and I.
Oh,
really? We played Gods forever. It, Brandon was the type of guy that would play a game into the ground. Like he'd get into a game and just play it until he mastered it. Right? So he did that with Mr. Do. He did that with Donkey Kong on the ColecoVision. He did it with Foundations Waste. He did it with Gods. He did it with Dungeon Master, and he did it with Chaos Strikes Back.
Right.
Which is a really hard game. I think he finished it.
He did it with Oids a little bit too, because he had Oids.
Oids, yeah, a lot. He loved all that stuff, and then he also in our, he also became a game designer with us.
Yeah,
we talked for a long time about making a role playing game, and he designed. I think I have some of the graphics that he made.
I have
still,
all the discs. I need to pull them off of my hard drive and then put them on the Mythigumpa game.
Yeah, I'll put them up. I'll give them to you so we can put in the video. But he made some graphics. We were designing a role-playing game to be made in Stoss called it was set in California, and you were like, this is before like the cult of Nikolai Tesla, but we had decided that Nikolai Tesla was your great uncle, and he had built this mansion, and it's where all these strange things came from, and we were going to use all the myths of California. We had this book called Mysterious California at the library where we worked, and we checked it out. And there's all kind of dumb, but a kind of fun, kind of interesting, like mythical monsters and stuff like that. And we were going to fill a map with that. And your role play, your RPG was going to be based on that.
Well, also, we had just taken the California Culture class, which is one of these 500 level classes at Long Beach State that are as hard as like a master's class in
Sure, yeah,
California
exactly.
culture. And that class taught us all kinds of myths of California and Day of the Locust and all those really interesting things. So we wanted to incorporate
Yeah,
that.
we kind of combine all that together. It's
Big
something,
California.
honestly, that California game is something I still want to make.
I really want to get to making a role-playing game at some point. I think it'd be great to, I don't know, maybe we can find one of the games Brandon was working on and work his stuff into it or something like that.
Oh yeah, that would be interesting if we could do that. Or we have the stuff, and
Not just
we
me.
have the stuff he made for us.
We do, but I meant he has been writing stories for a long time.
So then, so Brad and I worked at the library together for a long time, for like 5 years. And in that time, he started being a dungeon master again, but he dungeon master he was a game master for Palladium and Call of Cthulhu.
Right.
And for Palladium, he was fucking brilliant, and he made up these amazing adventures, but he would send them to Chaosium, but Chaosium would never want to publish them, which sucked. But they were amazing. Like, his
Yeah, I
stuff
don't
was
know why they
amazing.
didn't want to publish
I
it.
don't think Chaosium, or is it Chaosium? I don't think they did much publishing. They liked to build it
I
all
don't, or maybe they
themselves.
didn't want to take third party stuff. Like the same one, like now we got to pay someone royalties and we're not making any royalties already, right? Like stuff like
That's
that.
what I wanted to say. That's what I think. But what I learned today was that Brandon, I forgot that Brandon wrote an article for Dragon Magazine about Dungeons and Dragons
Right.
in our senior year in high school. And we'll put it up right now to see it, but it's really interesting because he was an aspiring writer his entire life, and he was really good. If you read this is it was a really good article at the time, and I can see his face and his voice
How's he
when I
saying
read it. Yeah, and I'm like, oh, this is Brandon. This is fantastic. Exactly what I would expect from the adventures that he made. But I think his shining glory was Call of Cthulhu, when he made up a he took us through, but made up a couple called Call of Cthulhu
Right.
mystery adventures, which were just incredible.
What should have been like later year books in that
Oh
universe.
yeah, oh yeah, and he did. He started writing stuff in the Cthulhu mythos. He started writing some books in the last few years
Right.
that he was working on. He was working on a set of that out to agents and stuff. He wasn't going to self-publish stuff. He wanted to find someone who liked his stuff enough to edit it. But then, the library, the my library, I got it. We graduated from college. My library, the library I worked at with him, closed. And again, for the second time, we kind of drifted apart.
A little bit. Brandon kept going. We graduated from college, but he was getting a teaching degree along with everything else, so he had to keep on for a few
Yeah,
more
he went for
years.
another 5 years after we graduated.
Was it really
Four or five
five?
years.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like 4 or 5 years. And so no, we so we were at school all the time together, and then he kind of did that, and we moved apart, and it just was like a natural thing.
Well, eventually. You know that when in he they lived 2 blocks from us for a while, so in the
Yeah.
Warfield house, so they were right there while Brandon was going to school. He lived with me. He was my roommate for 6 months, and then he moved over to the Warfield house, which was right down the street, and I would go over there all the time. You were over there too, but it was and then it was just they were right there, so it wasn't that far away. It just wasn't the same as it was.
It wasn't the same. I mean, I think we just grew apart in what we were doing too. Like it wasn't it, a lot less time. You know, we got married, a lot kids start coming along, a lot less time to do the things that we did. But I know one thing that that it did with Brandon is I gave him my copy of Diablo for the PC, and he went crazy for it. And then he went crazy for Diablo 2. And I think he played the same game of Diablo 2 for almost 10 years on his computer. He didn't need another game. He just played Diablo 2 the whole time. It was crazy.
He liked to
Except
see
he
his
all,
numbers go up. Brandon liked to see his
yeah, he
numbers
loved
go up.
it. And then he got a PlayStation. Somehow we convinced him to get a PlayStation 2, and he got Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance. Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance 2 and Champions of Nora, which are, you know, like action RPGs, really a little bit like Gates of Apshai. Gate,
Yeah.
sorry, like
Gateway to
Gateway to
Apshai. A little
Apshai.
like Gateway to Apshai, but a little more involved. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know
And
what I
then
forgot to
and
mention was that Brandon's the one arcade game he loved besides Mr. Do, which was what's that flying? Well, R-Type. So he loved R-Type.
Oh
And so
yes.
even though he
Did
so
love
he was
R-Type.
always looking for a game on the Atari ST that was R-Type, and he did get R-Type and he liked it. But he also had a couple other ones that he got that were just not that just did not solve the problem in his brain, right? Like it just didn't work. Like R-Type, like you couldn't play a Oh my God, I'm trying to think of what the game name. I'll put the game. I'll name it if I find it. But there's other games they got that just didn't do it. I mean, eventually at the beginning, you know, the Foundation's Waste did it horizontally, but it wasn't, you know, I mean vertically, but it wasn't a horizontal shooter. And so he did get R-Type and he liked it.
I think there just was a frame rate, the frame rate on the ST made the games feel, I don't, what's the, what's, I, it, like it feels not, it's just a little poppy,
Yeah.
a little jumpy
No, so
in a
it's not the
way
frame
that.
rate. It's more of the physics that they put into them, right? So yes, if the I understand what you mean. The frame rate on the ST made a little floaty, like, and with the music playing and those sound effects, you would always get in sort of dream state where things are kind of floating, you know. You had to get someone who knew what they were doing really well to do it. So you're right. It didn't work. It wasn't the same arcade thing that he was looking for.
So yeah, I think that what happened is so I gave him Baldur's Gate. We played some of those video games, but little by little, one of our other friends moved away to go work at Microsoft in multiple places, and then Brandon moved to he moved to San Pedro, which is you know far enough away, not so far away, but far enough away that you don't see people very often. You know what I mean? And he became a school teacher. A high school teacher, and he taught English, and then he taught honors English, and then he taught journalism. And they made a newspaper for a really long time. And I think that was his pride and joy was doing that newspaper. And I know he probably has a lot of kids. A lot of kids that really liked him. He'd always have these lessons where he would bring in like punk rock and make these like you know these kids listen to him. Or these are mostly hip hop kids he was teaching. And he, but they all I think some of them got it. And they liked what he was trying to do. But when we were working at Mattel, you and I on his breaks, so they had year-round school, and so he'd have like these month-long breaks. He would drive over, and we would go out to lunch together. I mean, he'd play music. It always felt like he had queued up a cassette
A new song, right?
for us to listen to, or songs that he was interested in. He wanted us to listen to him because he was really he always wanted to share his music. But he wasn't against like listening to our stuff as well, and
Yeah, no, he at the end he like was he really was playing Bruce Springsteen a lot. We'd got him into some of the music that we liked that was different than his, and he really liked it, and it was just sort
he
of,
liked
you know.
Tom Petty, Springsteen. He loves Springsteen. You know, for a guy who was so into heavy metal, probably would have rejected Springsteen in like 84. He
Well, the
loved
84 version of
every.
Springsteen, yes. Right? Like
Yeah, but the earlier version of Springsteen and the later the Tom Joad, you know, the Ghost of Tom Joad Springsteen. So
Yeah,
let's
so
see.
he
So I think the band though that finally and you know for a guy who was so into like old like 70s music and heavy metal and stuff like that, but the band that really got him was the Killers,
It was
and
interesting because there was about, yeah, it was strange
he
because
loved them.
10 years ago he said, "How come you never told me about the Killers?" And I'm all, "I didn't know you'd be interested in the Killers. Like I didn't know what he'd be interested in."
No, because I think down deep, Brandon had was he really had a soulful connection to music and stories, and the stories he made for us. It's hard. I wish we had them, because the stories he wrote for those role-playing games were incredible. And there were stories that we never heard the whole story. He wrote all the backstory,
Right, and we
and
never
then we
got all
only
of it.
experienced a little bit of the entire world that he created. And I think I honestly would tell you that I think for 30 years now, I have been hoping that we would be able to play a role-playing game with him again. Like him to be a dungeon master or game master, whatever you want to call it. And he would lead it. And
Just to hear his
I
stories.
just to hear his stories, just to live within whatever world he created and try to figure it out. And the nice thing, like I said, was as a dungeon master, he wasn't cruel. So he didn't want to kill everybody off. He wanted you to experience the story, get to the end, understand the little, Easter eggs he put in, or the mystery he wanted you to solve, or the clues he had put together. He wanted his success was if you got it, right?
Right.
And I think that was it. I think that's a unique approach. But the guy passes away at 53. I mean, we're never going to play an RPG with him again. We're ne and I and it really it's really hard. It's really hard to think about. You know what I mean? It's
It's
really hard.
not
I
just
was hoping,
no
there'd be a day
RPG.
when all our kids were out of the house and stuff, and we could return back and hey, we'll play something, you know?
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, those things get that gets really hard to think about.
I'd say earlier this year, I wrote a couple articles for a local newspaper, and one of them was about us. He and I work at the library. And what's interesting about that story, it's not just about he and I work in the library, but that's part of it. And the true part of that story was it's really about our librarian who died of cancer.
Right.
And about how it was just kind of a weirdly tragic death. They closed her library down, and then she died of cancer like a few years later. And I don't she wasn't that old. She's probably in her mid-40s, much younger than we are now, or at least the same age maybe. And I was thinking about that, and how I wasn't thinking of Brandon like that was a story about her, because I've always wanted to tell the story about the library that she created and all that. But I was thinking, like, it was about Brandon, and I know he had cancer, and I'm like, I subconsciously wrote that story for Brandon,
Yeah.
not necessarily for Mrs. Moore, but I'm glad he at least got to see it, see some of our little adventures in print. It probably kind of irked him too a little bit, because I know he wanted to get his stuff more stuff published,
Yeah,
and I don't I
possibly.
you know possibly, but that's not there's nothing I can do about that. Because the thing is for you and I, like, we're doing better now. Like, you and I are doing better. Like, we try to make better stuff now. There was a time when we would just create things and not care.
Yeah.
Quality be
Quality be
damned.
damned. Just
Just get it out. I don't care. And I think now we're kind of like retreated a little bit. It's like, no. Let's make sure. Let's try to make it good, at least as good as we can make it, right?
right.
And I think that's, but I think at the beginning, like, being able to just not care, and I don't know where that came from, where that attitude was like, I don't give a crap what it looks like. I'm just going to get something out there for people to play, or do or read or whatever. I think that attitude got us to create stuff early, and understand the satisfaction of getting stuff created. And so now, being more of a perfectionist about it, at least a little bit more, is not frustrating. It's like, no, I can wait a little while longer to get it done, because I know what it's like to just put something
Put
out there.
something right. You know what it's like to put something out that's not finished. It's only
But
half
I think
finished.
for Brandon, who works so long on these books, and he wrote a couple books that no one's ever seen, but they were really well written. And he wasn't going to self-publish them. He worked so long to find a publisher, that it could have been incredibly frustrating.
It was, I'm sure.
And then here I'm just publishing the stuff, and he's like, wait a minute, I'm the guy who's been crafting this stuff for years. you know, what's going on? It must have been frustrating. Or maybe he didn't care, but I don't. I imagine there was a little bit of that, and
I should have thought about that. Trilogy of the last Dragon Bride books and the other ones. If he wanted to write an article to publish in a thing, he could have, but he was looking at
something. Yeah, so but that wasn't his focus. I guess it wasn't his focus. But anyway, so that's it. That's all
didn't
she wrote.
So later on, in later years, didn't he just get like absorbed by Bejeweled? Candy Crush?
No, no. Yeah, he played so in later years, he played Candy Crush to like level 10,000. No joke. I could never, like, he and I played at the same time, but he had the same Candy Crush game going for like 11 years, and I had one for 10 years, but he played so much. He was so many levels ahead of me. It was incredible. And then when he said he got cancer, which I think was 3 years ago. He asked us to play Words with Friends online, and we played Words with Friends for years until one day he stopped.
Yeah, he stopped playing.
He didn't play any more Words, you know. And people talk about, I didn't see this thing online. We were like, there was, you know, it's like shows these toys outside. It's like there was a day in the past when all of you, your friends played outside, and then the next day you didn't. It was the last day. And I'm like, yeah, well, there was a day I played that Brandon laid his last word on Words with Friends and then stopped playing. And then, but even after that, he would make these little word games up. You know, when he really couldn't do anything anymore, he would post these word games, and they were like little puzzles for you to solve that were like a rhyming puzzle.
Yeah.
And he did those. I mean, the last one, I think his wife was publishing them in the last few months. He would tell them to her, and then he would put it up on Facebook, you know, still trying to give people joy, still trying to try to make stories for people, still trying to create that world
for other people. They're called Monster Rhymes, and it usually would be some sort of animal and sort of beast related rhyme. They always were pretty good, and they always were.
I know, but even in the end, he was trying to create joy for people, trying to envelop people in a world, in a story world.
Yeah. He wasn't a waste. He needed more time, man. 53, and he never got his stuff published. And he needed to get it published.
He needed time to finish. It's so sad they didn't have time to finish. And it's just a top guy. I don't know if you could find one person. I don't know if there's anyone that I know that would admittedly say that he did them wrong.
Yeah, I don't ever think so.
But I don't know. At least up front, you know. Not a backstabber, not a, you know.
Didn't have a bone in his body that looked like a backstab or anything like that, right?
So, you know, I don't know. This episode probably sucks. These are hard, you know. This is a hard one. This is like the big chill, right? This is our friend who we were friends with forever, who was as close to a confidant and a like-minded person as we ever knew in person, right? There's people we've met online, right? And people through the years, you're like, wow, they live across the country, across the world. And we can recognize, you know, like, hey, they're like me. And it's kind of crazy that they lived, you know, far across the world or live in, you know, wherever. There's a lot of people from this podcast that have similar feelings that we do, and it's great to meet them, and it's like amazing. But I think with Brandon, it was the one person that we grew up with, right? You know, proximity is not a great predictor of friendship at all, right? And you can see that. I can see that with my kids. They're not really friends, really good friends with anyone they grew up with. They find their friends online who are like-minded. But he was a guy who we grew up with, and for better or for worse, we peanut buttered his chocolate. He chocolated our peanut butter, and we became fast friends.
Yeah. All the sunflower seeds and generic lemonade he could drink.
Yeah, I mean, for role playing games, when we go over to his house, it was role playing games, which were great. And then he had this generic Yellow Wrap iced tea mix. It was really like iced tea flavored sugar that you would stick into water and then mix a lot of sugar in there. And then it was iced tea, and we'd drink that all night long and eat sunflower seeds and play off this giant plastic mat he had that he would draw everything on. He'd draw his things that he'd crafted for weeks, months. I imagine he couldn't wait for us to play these things.
He would always tell us that, like, he'd roll up these characters that would be in there and that we'd fight and stuff like that. And I know it sounds silly, but he was in love with these characters. Like, he would make them, and he didn't want his character to die. He also didn't make them so strong that they could beat up all these big parties of adventurers, and you could never win either. He understood that.
No, he loved his stories. He loved the stories he was making, he loved the stories he was making. I think he was destined. His destiny was, I mean, the role-playing game adventures he came up with were incredible. He should have been a computer game designer, literally designing computer games. I don't know if that I don't know if he'd ever wanted to do that job, or if it was a job that would ever have been ever opened up for him in any way. But if there ever was a person who would have excelled in the world of, like, role-playing games, the stories and games that exist now, like he would have excelled. He would have been amazing at it.
Yeah, he should have been the Cliffy B of some sort of role playing company.
Yeah. I mean, you know,
Brandon C of the of a role playing.
I mean, no detriment to anyone who's actually does it. He should have been one too. He should have been one too. And I know we tried. I mean, we started building that game, right? And maybe if we had finished the California game, he would have been, right? He would have been the designer. You know, he was a good artist, and he was good at coming up with these stories, and maybe if we had done it, it's just that we weren't ready to do it at the time. So, you know, it'd be good someday to salute him by finishing that game.
Yeah.
And the idea behind it. That's
a good idea.
Anyway, but if there ever was a guy who was part of the Vertical Blank, it's Brandon.
Yeah.
I mean,
100%
Vertical Blank. He was.
And now he really is part of the Vertical Blank with Mom, Dad, Mari, John.
Yeah.
Part of the Vertical Blank. All right.
Rest in peace, buddy.
Rest in peace, Brandon. It just wasn't long enough.
It's unfair. Makes no sense.
Makes no sense. It's very
There's no unfair. Sense to it. Absolutely unfair. If anything was fair, but nothing's fair. But, you know, it's just, that's it.
So after we recorded this, Brandon's wife invited us in December to his house to take some of his treasures that he had kept. And that's how I could think of it. We looked over his treasures. These are things that he kept for his entire life. And I felt honored to be able to get a couple of the things that I remember from him growing up. So one of them was a 12-inch Stormtrooper. I think it was one of the first things I saw when I went into his room the first day. And another thing was this clipboard that Brandon used for every D&D and role-playing game that we played. He would put stuff on the clipboard and show it to us, or, you know, either privately or as a group as part of his storytelling. And the third thing is this Disneyland map. I don't remember it ever being on his wall, but it reminded me of that story of the Motley Crue incident, and I just couldn't pass up having Brandon's own Disneyland map. And by the way, a few months later in 2024, there was a memorial for Brandon at his school. And I went to it, and they put a plaque up because he was a teacher. He was a well-liked English teacher and journalism teacher, and they put a plaque up for him at a tree. And so there is a memorial, and there is a place to go back now if we want to visit our friend again. Anyway, that was Brandon, the first time, you know, it's tough when, you know, it's tough to face the reality that the friends we had and ourselves are going to pass away someday. I hope you liked it. If you made it all the way through, I hope it gives you some comfort.